Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Carl, and this is the second of our ISF podcast, Incredibly Strange Films. And I want to welcome everyone. Doc, are you there? My producer?
Yeah,
I guess not.
I'm here. I just had my microphone on mute.
Okay, so just tell us what the phone number is to call in.
People want to call in. The phone number to call in to our we lost the caller. I'm not sure what just happened here. I'll bring him back in. Our guest call in number is 657-383-0397. And I think the number with the error code of 612, we have you back on the air.
Okay. This is Sam, and I'm back.
Okay, good, good, good. So, okay, now that Sam's back, I'll introduce Sam. Sam is our basically our co-host today because my regular co-host had a slight accident today that she'll be recovering. She had to go to the ER for a bite. But she'll be okay, and she'll be back with us on Tuesday. But I would like to introduce Sam Esplin. Sam, say hello.
Hi, I'm Sam Lesson.
And Sam is our Trent Harris aficionado and part of the Ruben and Ed Film People Facebook group. If by the end of this podcast you're absolutely enthralled with all the films that we're going to be talking about, you got to join that group, no question about it. And of course, our main guest and someone I really appreciate coming on would be filmmaker Trent Harris. Trent, say hello.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hey, Trent.
So, my first question, Trent, is basically, how did you get involved in film? How did this all start?
Well, you know, my very first job, I was about 8 or 9 years old, and I changed the marquee at the Romance Theater in Rexburg, Idaho, St. Anthony, Idaho. And for that, they would give me free movie tickets and all the popcorn that I wanted. So I watched every Elvis Presley movie, every Doris Day movie, every Japanese monster movie that ever came out. And it wasn't until I got almost into college, I actually saw a movie called The Seventh Seal, an Ingmar Bergman film. And I'd never seen anything like that. So I went and found a film professor. I said, what the hell's that all about? It's in black and white. It's not in English. What's going on here? I think that's really cool. So he literally handed me a camera and told me to go out and make a movie. He said, here's a camera and here's some film. So I went out to the salt flats and shot some pictures of mud and then brought it back and painted the basketball white and projected the mud onto the basketball. It was just brilliant. That was my first film.
Oh, wow.
So coming, you know, I mean, just coming up with that idea, you know, that shows a very unique perspective. And so that's... Well, I wouldn't have come up with it. I can tell you that.
I wish I still had that film and the basketball. I'd love to see that again.
But you got a camera in you and that sort of thing. You went to college. Did you go to college for film, or how did you start?
I wasn't the best student in the world until I found film, and then I just would go every day, all day, to film classes and learn everything I could, just make one movie right after another. So I got a degree from the University of Utah and then got a job and then later went to the American Film Institute in Los Angeles and spent about 4 or 5 years there.
Okay. And then you came out of AFI and you started doing your first short, correct?
No, I'd been making shorts for, you know, I'd made about a, I'm not exaggerating, I've probably made 150 films or more. I've just been making films ever since that basketball movie. I've been working on one or another. I mean, the AFI, when I got to AFI, I really, the thing that taught me was more the narrative sort of structure that I lacked. I'd been doing mostly experimental things and goofy things and funny things, but I really didn't understand narrative filmmaking at all. So AFI helped with that quite a bit.
Okay. So then you go into The Beaver Kid, and then, of course, that becomes The Beaver Trilogy later. Talk a little bit about that, because I'm not familiar with this. And Sam, if you have any questions after Trent's done, you pop in and do
I have several Beaver-related questions.
Beaver Trilogy. In 1979, I walked out into a parking lot and started testing a video camera and ran into this guy out there from Beaver, Utah. And to make a long, very long story short, I followed him around and made a short film about him. And he later asked me not to, or a short documentary about him, and he later shot himself because he didn't like the idea of the documentary. So basically, I redid the story. I recast it, and Sean Penn played the part. I made it with a home video camera. You know, I think the budget was like $100, and then I redid it again with Crispin Glover. So, and then eventually I put the three of them together, and that became the Beaver Trilogy.
Okay.
Well,
Go, go ahead, Sam. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, when did that happen with Groove and Gary? When did he own life, or did he? I assume. He said he was going to shoot himself, or he did shoot himself.
He did shoot himself, but it didn't kill him. This happened. That would have been 1979, I believe, is when I shot that.
Yeah.
And then I think that's right. And then 79, then I think 81 was when I did the one with Sean, and 84, 85 is when I finished the one with Crispin. I don't know. There's so much written on that movie. Well, no, he ended up dying it's been maybe 7 or 8 years ago.
But did you keep in touch with him till then?
I completely lost track of him until the year 2000, and Sundance decided they were going to run the Beaver Trilogy, and basically I kept the movie a secret, but I decided, you know, I hadn't shown it really to anybody at all, but it sort of, because I didn't want the guy to shoot himself again, really, so I kept it kind of a secret. But when it came out at Sundance, I contacted him, and he came down and watched the film, and he was pretty flabbergasted by the whole experience. And he lived a couple more years, and then he ended up dying of a heart attack. It was kind of a tragic thing. There's a movie about the whole thing. I tell you the truth, I'm so sick of talking about the Beaver Trilogy because I've just been talking about it since 1979.
Right.
But there's a movie about it called Beaver Trilogy Part 4 that premiered at Sundance a couple of years back, which...
Hmm.
I didn't make the movie. Somebody else made the movie, but it kind of explains the whole backstory and of everything that happened. And I'm pretty sure that you can find that on Netflix and things like that. I know it's been streaming.
Okay.
So this brings up a question for me. Of course, you know, the second part was with Sean Penn, and the third part was with Crispin Glover. How did you hook up with those two actors?
You know, with Sean Penn, I just called him on the phone. I just called him on the phone, and I said, "You don't know me. I'm from Idaho, and I've got this idea that I want to make a movie about a guy that likes to dress up like Olivia Newton-John." He said, "Well, okay." And so I made him audition, which was really funny. He came over.
Oh my God!
he hadn't really done anything at this point. Right.
Well, he was doing Fast Times at that point. Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But he came over and he said, "I don't want to audition, but what I will do is I will be the Beaver Kid, and I will we'll just hang out all day, and I'll be the kid." So, you know, I took him around, introduced him to my friends as this guy from Idaho. You know, that was because nobody knew who Sean was at that point. And then it was really funny because the next year people came up to me and said, boy, your cousin from Idaho really became a big star.
Wow.
Well, fans of Sean Penn
and then
really need to see that movie.
Kristen was just a friend of mine around Hollywood. I just can't even remember exactly how I met him. I'm sure I auditioned him for something. And we became good friends, and he just sort of fit right into that part so well. So we cast him for the third one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know his dad, actually.
Bruce is a great guy.
I did a podcast with Bruce.
Yeah,
Bruce is
a lot of fun.
Oh, Bruce is an absolute blast.
Yeah, I haven't seen him forever. Yeah.
No. But yeah, I mean, just that alone, calling Sean Penn out of the blue, that my friend is chutzpah, and that's a wonderful thing to have.
I mean, what's the worst you can do? Hang up, big deal, huh?
I don't think I'd be able to do it, but man, that's something. So, of course, now we get on. I don't know anything about the Orkley Kid. Can you tell us anything about that particularly?
Well, the Orkley Kid is the third version of the Beaver trilogy. So it's the same story about the kid from Beaver, Utah, only I changed the name of the town to Orkley because I was still trying to pretend that I had never done the first one.
Okay.
I was trying to keep it a secret, so I just named it Orkley, and I thought, well, nobody will ever see this anyway. It's really crazy because that movie has had legs like nothing. It plays all over the place. I was in, before this virus hit, I played in Berlin. I went to the screening there, and they actually projected the movie on three different screens at the same time. And you could walk between the screens, and then when the kid starts to sing, all of the screens synced up at that moment. It was incredible. There were people in Berlin dressed up like the Beaver Kid, singing Olivia Newton-John songs. It was just wild. Uh-oh.
That must blow your mind. You do these films, you know, very small. You don't expect anything like that. And then something like that happens. That's got to, like, be wow. Seriously.
Yeah, It's been a weird trip, that one particularly. I've been with that movie since 1979, and here we are sitting here talking about it in 2020.
Good
it's
Lord.
It's nutty.
yeah.
Can you see now why I'm kind of tired of talking about it?
Hell yeah!
Can I ask you one more question?
We're going to move on, folks. We're moving on.
This is a really silly question. Can I ask Trent one other thing about it? And this is silly.
Sure.
Has Olivia Newton-John ever acknowledged it?
No, I tried. I reached out through some people to try to see if she wanted to watch it, but I never really heard back. But it was funny because when Sean married Madonna, they moved into Olivia Newton-John's house in Malibu, and it burned down.
Wow.
Serendipity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So now we'll move on to Ruben and Ed. And this is the one film that I do know of yours. And there, it's a road movie, of course. And there are two road movies from that period of time, yours being one of them, and the other one being Abby Wool's Roadside Prophets, which I think are just phenomenal films. And
yeah,
I think they're
about
not
film,
nearly
yeah.
as well known as they should be.
Yeah, well, the studio pretty much buried Ruben and Ed when it came out. It's funny because they're actually going to release it after, 30 years. They're going to release it on Blu-ray, I think, next week, you know, which is very surprising. I suspect that Sony's digging into their archive and basement trying to figure out new revenue resources because they can't release any movies. So they're coming up and pulling things off the shelf and say, well, let's dust this one off and release it. But, it's been 30 years. I tried my damnedest to get them to release the thing and never could.
But you know what?
Everything that everybody's only familiar with pirates of that movie for the most part.
Right. you know, the one thing about it is that's what I call a VHS slash, you know, a DVD find. Because you'd go into a video store and suddenly you see Howard Hessman, Karen Black, you know, Crispin Glover. What's this?
What the hell is this?
You know, and there are as many films from that period of time that studios didn't release or didn't feel that they would make money. And so they immediately would take it over to VHS or DVD. And yeah. And that, for sure, that's how I found it, was in a video store. And I said, what the hell is this? And I watched it and I loved it.
Yeah, part of the problem, I think, was the movie was actually released in theaters in L.A., but it was the week of the L.A. riots, I think. So, you know, it wasn't – people just were not in the mood to watch two Republicans trying to bury a frozen cat, I guess. And then the reviews were insane. I mean, I think the guy from the L.A. Times said, the person that made this movie ought to have their driver's license taken away. And the Boston Globe said, oh, my God, this is the worst movie of the decade. But that's when I actually knew I was onto something with that one.
Oh, yeah.
But
Howard
Hessman
is so perfectly cast.
What's
that? How did you end up with him? Howard Hessman is so, I mean, just a perfect example of perfect casting. How did you end up with him?
Well, it's serendipity. The actual person that I cast in it was Peter Boyle. And Peter was great, but Peter had a kind of a stroke about 10 days into shooting, and Peter and Howard were friends. So Peter said, you know, you should get Howard in here to do this movie. And so, Howard just picked it up immediately. It took him about 5 seconds, and he understood the character and everything.
Yeah.
And God, that guy is like a machine. He's so professional. He never forgets a line. It's just amazing. Just cranks it right out. It's like, come on, let's go.
and of course, you have one of my favorite actresses in it, too, and that's
Karen,
Karen
yeah.
Black.
What a delightful person, yeah.
No.
I cast her in Plan 10 from Outer Space also, and that movie, I didn't have any budget at all, and she called me up on the phone. She said, I heard you're making a movie, Trent. I said, yeah, but I don't have any money, Karen. She said, I don't care. I'll be up there on Friday. Make sure there's a part for me. So she just worked for free for the whole thing. She's just a delightful person.
Yeah. Yeah,
She loved to work. She just loved to work, you know. It made her happy.
You know, but that film too. The other thing that is interesting is you actually. I'm going to get geeky here for a second. You actually worked with the Chido brothers on that too, with the special effects.
You're talking Plan 10. You're talking Ruben and Ed.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
The
exactly.
The water skiing cat.
The cat, of course. For people that don't know the Chido brothers, yes, you do, because the one film that they were behind that everybody knows, of course, is Killer Clowns from Outer Space. But I've always loved their work, and the cat is just wonderful in that film.
Yeah, water-skiing cat. You know, I called them the Kyoto brothers. Are you pronouncing it wrong, or am I?
Let me put it this way. You know them. I don't. So you're pronouncing it right.
Well, that doesn't mean I still could have called him the wrong name for a year and nobody would have told me. those guys were great, though. They were really fun.
Yeah, Chido. I don't know. Whoever, whatever the pronunciation guys, we like you. Okay.
Yeah, they were delightful people, too. You know, I just said, I need a cat that will water ski. And they said, oh, okay. You know, no problem.
How do you come up with this stuff, Trent? Seriously. I mean, let's face it. Write the films. You direct them. You know, I'm sure you shoot them, too. And you do all this. But you come up with some of the most unusual and I'm using that word with quotes, what the F stuff, which I just think is amazing.
You know, it was really funny because my mentor at American Film Institute, I was telling him a story about when I grew up in Idaho, and there was a drive-in theater. It was called the Spud Drive-In, only the S had fallen off, so it was the Pud Drive-In. And I'd get in my old truck, and I'd go to the drive-in, and there would be like sheep grazing around the truck and stuff like that. And they almost always ran the reels out of order. So the movies were the most abstract, screwed-up, weird-ass things you've ever seen. They'd start with reel four, and then they'd run reel one. And I was telling that story to my mentor, and he said, well, that explains a lot about your style. And he called it Idahodian infantilism, which I was really watching.
I like it. I like it. Yeah,
it's
my
movement. It's a movement, Idahodian infantilism. We could get Matthew Barney in there, too. He's from Idaho, and that'd work.
Yeah, I actually have I won't go into it here, but I have a background with drive-ins, too, because I was 15 years old and started working at a drive-in, and basically that meant watching films and getting stoned in the projection booth. But
right.
But yeah, drive-ins are just amazing.
Oh, I know. I miss them so much. I wish they were more of them around still.
Well, you know what? It's happening. You know, even here in the city, you've got places now that you're doing these pop-up drive-ins,
right,
and so on and so forth. And, of course, with COVID and that sort of thing, you might really see a rebirth of these.
Well, I hope so. I hope so.
I certainly hope so, too.
Yeah, that was so much fun.
It was such a seminal place in my life. That's how I got to love
her. I mean, that's your first experience with girls and beer in the drive-in theater.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So Sam, do you have any other questions on Ruben and Ed?
Well, I do have one question, and I'm personally fascinated with funny, esoteric dancing. In Ruben and Ed, when Ruben's listening to Mahler and he's squeaking his toy, how much of that dancing around was scripted and how much of it was just Crispin being hilarious?
Well, I think in the script it says he's dancing, but it's just, I certainly didn't choreograph that.
No, it's so specific. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, usually I'm pretty specific with what I write, particularly when it comes to dialogue. I mean, I really try to get my actors to stick with the dialogue that I wrote because I spend so much time coming up with some of those lines. But I'm not a person that believes in improv at all, really. I mean, I think there are times when it can work, but I just much prefer to write it out and have them do it.
Gotcha. Well, that little dance is one of my favorite parts of the film.
Hats
off to Crispin for that.
Yeah.
And the other thing is to do it to Mahler, too, which is one of my favorite classical composers.
Yeah, originally I was going to do Rachmaninoff, but I couldn't get the rights because of the anyway, it wasn't in public domain at that point, but Mahler worked great.
Perfect.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's so much fun to make movies. You know, it is just so much fun. It's the thing that makes me the happiest. I just love doing it.
So that brings up a thing. You have a little company in Salt Lake, Utah. How is that? You know, is that just you, or you have people working with you,
It's just me. But then what I've done is I've created a kind of a family of people around me that I can come back to at different times. You know, I'll cast the same people over and over, and I have friends that I work with that will help me shoot, and I usually do all of the editing, and sometimes I'll even compose the music. But I like to think of them as a family of people, and we all come together and decide to make a movie, and it's really fun. It's just, it's doesn't have to be so painful.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about in terms of distribution and raising money and fundraising?
Well, in terms of distribution, basically I just sell DVDs off the internet, you know, but I've been around so long and I've had such a presence on the internet for so long that there'll be screenings, you know, people are always asking for screenings in different places. So, you know, the Alamo Draft House will screen things in different places and maybe, you know, some of those little theaters in Brooklyn, like, what is it, the Spectator or the Spectre?
Yeah, the Spectator, which a friend of mine had a film debut there, Daniel Kramer, last fall.
Well,
yeah, I know exactly
what
you're talking about.
I just love that idea of those little theaters that just, you know, get together and screen stuff. There's a cinema in Amsterdam that screened through 4 of my movies just during the COVID crisis, actually. So it just kind of limps along of its own fruition. It's not like I push anything too much. I just make them, and they kind of either find a life or they don't find a life. I found if I try to promote stuff, it doesn't really help that much.
Job. Okay, people listening, please buy your movies from Trent. Trent, give us a place where we can buy your films. Seriously.
You know, if they just Google Trent Harris Films, it'll come right up. Trent Harris Films, a page will come right up with a bunch of stuff on it. It's called EchoCave.net because the Echo Cave comes out of Reuben and Ed, so that's the actual website. But you know, I make
that's
these
I
movies
found,
so
yeah.
cheaply. I make these movies so cheaply that I don't really have to spend a lot of time trying to raise money. I found out a long time ago it's easier just to get a job and save money than it is to go out and try and, you know, talk strangers out of money on a, you know, I mean, this notion that you're going to make any money making independent films is, you know, you stand a much better chance on a crap table in Vegas.
Well, in my case, it would be a poker table, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, you have your own vision and you have, you know, different ideas. And one of the ones that really, I guarantee you, I'm going to order this from you. Is Delightful Water Universe. And all I can tell you is what I'm reading on IMDb, and this is verbatim, okay? This is from IMDb. In the near future, the country is run by nincompoops, and some believe Bigfoot is controlling primetime TV. As America descends into anarchy, a revolutionary madman and a drunken womanizer may be America's last hope. Now, how close is that to reality right now? Oh, my friggin' Lord.
Yeah, well, it's also that we discover in the movie that the president is having his mind controlled by Bigfoot. So it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. Certainly would explain a lot.
But the whole idea, just that wonderful little synopsis. You know, if people right now at ISF who are listening, seriously, if that doesn't make you want to see this movie, then I don't know why you're in our group in the first place. Seriously.
It's
we
a great
are called
movie.
Incredibly Strange Films. And one of the things that I have to say, and I'm going to make a post on this, is like, You're the type of guy that we need to really support because it's a unique vision. And I think, and to me, you know, something that I haven't seen before or I hadn't even thought was possible in terms of a fun. Okay? And I have seen...
I've become
you know,
my own genre. I'm my own genre.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons that I think Sam would agree with me that you have a very rabid fan base. It might be small, but damn, they're loyal to a fault.
Rabid.
Would you agree with that, Sam?
Very much. And I think
Bill Allred gives a million-dollar performance in Delightful Water Universe. He's just incredible.
So Sam, what do you know about that film, or do you have any questions about that particular film?
Well, I have a question that's kind of related to that film. I was curious about the episodes of Echo People that you've done. Is Stephanie Russell playing the same? Is she playing the same character as she did in Delightful Water Universe? She certainly has the same vocal affectation.
Yeah, well, it's pretty close to the same character. I mean, you know, she's a environmentalist who writes books. What was her book? Ants and Eatable Plants, I think, is the book that she wrote. But yeah, I used Stephanie. I met Stephanie on Plan 10 from Outer Space, and then that cast her. She's in Delightful Water Universe, and she's in Welcome to the Rubber Room, and now she's in Echo People. So, you know, I talked a little bit about building a family of people around, and she's definitely one of them.
She's my favorite.
Oh, I just adore her. She's so wonderful. I wish we could finish Echo People. We've got one episode left to finish, and because of this stupid virus, we haven't been able to finish shooting. I could finish it in probably 2 days, but we just
haven't been able to do it. And people probably, not everybody listening probably doesn't know this, but it's kind of an informal sequel to Reuben and Ed.
It is.
An homage,
not exactly
maybe.
A sequel. I'd call it a spinoff of Reuben and Ed. There are many of the same kind of themes, you know, Andy Warhol still sucks a big one in that movie, and they've got platform shoes and strange. It's a lot of it's shot in exactly the same locations as Reuben and Ed. I mean, literally the same rock that Reuben sat on would be in Reuben and or in Echo People also. It's been
and people can watch
make.
Those first two episodes on YouTube.
Yeah, I've got them up on my. If they go to my website, if they look up TrentHarris.films, TrentHarrisFilms. There's something on there called Coconut TV. And if you click on Coconut TV, you can watch some of my shorts and the two Echo People episodes.
And they are great. I was
laughing.
The first one especially, I laughed through the entire thing. So entertaining.
I just love that.
Excuse me, gentlemen, we have a caller.
Uh-oh.
All right.
I'm gonna pop him right in.
Okay, thank you.
Hello,
this is Carl. Who is this?
Hey, Carl, this is Jeff Gaughan, Jeff Sparks. How are you guys?
Jeff.
Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. This is a really good conversation. And Mr. Harris, I got to say hats off to you, sir, for carving out a career that's your own and doing your own thing. I just love that.
Well, thank you so much. It means a lot because, sometimes I feel like I'm just working in a vacuum. You know, I live in Salt Lake. It's not exactly a big film community, and I'm always just really happy that people get to watch my movies.
Are connecting. Yeah, with the internet, that's
surprised.
Really happening, huh? That's awesome. I was wondering, how did you land in Salt Lake City from Idaho?
Well, that far, my mother was a small town newspaper reporter, so I followed her around, when I was a little boy. And eventually she ended up in Salt Lake City when I was in about the eighth grade, probably.
Okay.
So I stayed here until late 70s, and then I moved to Los Angeles for about, 10, 15 years, and then hated
it. Right, that's about all you can take, right?
Yeah, it's like, gosh.
Yeah. Did you start out as a journalist at some point? I saw a few interviews on YouTube.
I've always done I've done a lot of documentaries. In fact, I did a lot of documentaries for WNET out of New York.
I saw the Ginsberg piece, and that was really cool, by the way.
Oh, that was actually made for a TV station here in Salt Lake.
Okay.
A long time ago. That was
right. Yeah, I think it was
79,
78.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's
and then
the
Tim
show
Leary
I
one.
Was working, that was the show I was working for when I started the Beaver Trilogy. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
wow.
I continued to do that on and off. I really enjoy that kind of straightforward. It's not. I wouldn't call it exactly investigative reporting. More magazine-type documentaries.
Sure.
I love doing those things.
That's great stuff. Absolutely. And I'm curious, when you were at AFI, did you ever come across David Lynch? Some of your material feels like Lynchian in some ways.
He came to AFI. You know, he graduated just the year before I got there, and he'd come back and wander around the halls and do a seminar now and again. I was always trying to work with him, but it never worked out. I wanted to work on he had a TV show at the time called The Hotel, I believe it was.
Huh. But
I couldn't get a job to save my life there. But
I see. Wow. Yeah.
I've always admired his work so much.
Oh, me too. He's one of my favorites. Absolutely.
Yeah, isn't he great?
Wow. Yeah, he is. And
that
it's amazing
Lost
he's still
Lost
at it
Highway.
And doing his thing. And he's a true artist, just like you are, sir. So it's just, I thought you might have been, you know, friends with him or may have known him back in the day. But I get it.
Not nearly enough, that's for sure.
Sure.
Okay.
Who were some of your influences back then when it comes to filmmaking and
well,
whatnot? I'm curious.
Of course, Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, nice.
One. And then the other one is Ed Wood. I mean, a lot of people make fun of Ed Wood, but, you know, you try and make a movie that people are talking about.
Yeah, he was a
later.
German man. Yeah.
He was
especially
incredible.
Back
I mean,
then.
That movie, Glenn or Glenda, I Changed My Sex, that is one of the very first Dadaistic films. I mean, the guy, it's one of my favorite films.
Awesome.
And,
I actually saw that in New York in the 80s. They brought it out, I think it was at Thalia. And I was just amazed at that movie. Seriously.
Oh, I know. It's still one of my favorite films. You know, if I had to list all my favorite films, it'd be one of them.
That would be cool.
Yeah. But honestly, go ahead.
Okay. But one of the things I've always said about film and filmmakers is they have to have a passion. And if they have a passion for what they're doing, even if it's misguided, or, you know, people think it's misguided, you see it and you should love it anyway. Seriously, I've always thought that Ed Wood as a director was a heck of a lot better than so many other filmmakers out there that just do it to do it, you know?
Heck yeah.
Ed Wood movie than a Steven Spielberg movie any day.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so with you on that. It's not even funny. Seriously.
Wow. Hey, did you ever come across Curtis Harrington, by the way, Mr. Harris? I knew him back
Curtis
in the day.
Curtis Harrington.
Filmmaker. No, actually, he grew up in L.A. and Beaumont in this area, Southern California, where I'm from, actually. And he made a bunch of avant-garde films back in the 40s, and then he was a filmmaker for Corman for a number of years, and he did his own stuff, and he made a bunch of films
probably
in the 70s.
Probably the best known film of his would be, like, Night Tide.
Yes. That was his first
one. Another
one
I love is The Killing Kind. I'm a big fan.
Curtis, that's great. He would love that.
Oh, yeah, I know Curtis here. Oh, without a doubt.
A good friend of his for about 12 years at the end of his life there. And worked on one of his short films, and he was actually in one of my short films, so it was really neat.
Well, I'm
going to
have to look him up. I'm not familiar with his
you
work,
dig him.
I don't think.
Yeah, I think you would really enjoy his work. It's kind of in that David Lynchian kind of realm, you know. He did things that were different, and he was very macabre, and he was very Val Lewton-y, you know. He didn't like to show the monster right away, you know. He liked to have suspense. He was a great thriller director. And he ended up doing a lot of television because his movies didn't make money in the end. So he ended up making a bunch of stuff for Spelling for ABC.
But even those films are phenomenal. Who Slew Annie Rue is one of them.
Sure.
Whatever Games. Happened to Aunt Alice.
Yeah.
They're still really good films. Anyway, I'm going to let you go off here because we got a couple more films to go over with Trent.
Alrighty.
I want to thank you very, very much for calling. I appreciate it, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks for
calling. And by the way, if you're not a member of Incredibly Strange Films, you should check us out.
Oh, I am. Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
All right, guys. Cool. I'll see you.
Take care. Thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, you got it. See you.
All right, man. Well, that was a nice surprise. Real, nice to get a
Jeff's
caller.
A very good guy. Jeff has made a number of short films himself, and he's written a script based on John Coyne's book Hobgoblin, which Coyne himself has praised incredibly. Jeff's worked in Hollywood a long time. You talked to me about him,
actually, Sam. So I'll be getting contact with him for sure.
Oh yeah.
Excuse me, gentlemen. We have another caller.
Oh goodness gracious!
Yes. All right, caller. I know you. I think you can hear me. I'm going to bring you into the studio right now.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Absolutely.
Yes,
who is this, please?
Okay, I'm David. I'm a member of Incredibly Strange Films. David Whittington.
David, how are you, sir? He is our grand scuba.
Yeah, I created their group. Your film is making me want to go to Utah.
Oh, good.
I've seen most of your, a whole lot of your shorts, whether you're looking at road signs or filming ants crawling on the ground. I love the Rubber Room. Beatniks,
oh,
UFO, that's great.
Oh, good.
I've seen 2 episodes of The Echo People. How many are there?
Well, there's only 2 that are done.
Oh, okay.
You know, I'd like to make about 45,000. I probably won't.
Yeah, I think I'd like that too.
They're really fun to make, and I was just talking about that. I'm almost done with the third version or the third episode.
So,
I want to keep doing those. We got to get rid of this stupid virus.
Maybe sometime this year.
Yeah. Seriously.
Okay. One I haven't seen but I'm looking forward to is Luna Mesa.
Oh
really
yeah.
Good.
Pardon
French
me?
French stars in that one.
Excuse me?
French stars in that one. It's great.
Okay.
Yeah, right. No, that's a... I spent a couple of years making that one. I filmed that movie in, 8 different countries. Filmed it in Rwanda, Cambodia, Thailand, Mexico, over the place.
I've seen a clip from Cambodia, I think.
It's pretty neat. It's a real talk about an experimental movie. It's really an incredibly strange film, but I quite like it.
I'm looking forward to whenever I can see it.
Yeah.
And you know, there's still nothing to do in Beaver. There's still nothing to do in Beaver, Utah.
No.
I haven't been there, but I've looked up things to do. There's like 3 things. You can go to an ice creamery, and you can hike around a. Hike around, that's it.
That's about it. You know, he's buried just outside of Beaver in a place called Minersville. And they actually, I don't know, have you seen Beaver Trilogy? Because his car is on his gravestone. The car is
all 3
that
parts.
I usually
skip over part 2 because I'm not really I'm not a Sean Penn fan. But
yeah.
The first one's a great documentary. I love Crispin Glover. He's great in Urban.
Yeah, I think both of them pale in comparison to the real kid. The real kid's just amazing to watch.
Yeah. Groove and Gary, yeah?
Groove and Gary.
I think they saved his car. And it's either
I hope so. I bet his family's got it. I can't believe they would get rid of it.
Oh, yeah, no, they still have it. I was thinking it was in the museum, but I think it's just for his family.
Yeah.
They've redone it and stuff like he had it before. That's interesting. I think they did something about Farrah Fawcett, license plate, stuff like that. So
that was the name. He called his car Farrah.
Yeah.
He had to start it with a screwdriver, which is always funny to watch. Pop the hood and stick a screwdriver in there.
Well, I've seen the entire Welcome to the Rubber Room, but... apparently it's not available anymore because I didn't see it. I haven't seen it again. I was going to show it to somebody.
Oh, what do you mean on the internet you saw it?
Yeah, on the internet, probably YouTube.
Oh, I probably put it up for like a, I'm surprised, I don't know. I think I put it up on YouTube for a like a shut-in cinema week or something like that. So I just, but I'm, I may have taken it down. I should put
yeah,
it back
maybe
up.
Yeah,
maybe
when I saw
probably.
It. It's been a while.
Yeah.
A while back.
So
yeah,
so
like
since
three or four
we're talking
ago.
About Rubber Room, I couldn't find really any information on that. Tell us a little bit about the plot of it and what it's about.
It's funny.
Well, the Rubber Room is a bar. It's like a beatnik bar down in a basement, and it's on its last night. It's about to be closed because the developers have bought the land, and they're going to turn it into a pottery barn. So it's this group of, like, misfit poets and artists trying to figure out how to save the Rubber Room. That's kind of that's basically the plot. And then there's a flying saucer. I always like to put a flying saucer in my movies.
So. Right. A flying saucer is pretty well done.
I didn't know it was a good flying saucer.
Yeah.
Go to echocave.net and get yourself a copy. It's a great,
oh,
great
yeah.
movie.
Yeah, they're there.
Yeah, I've been there. It's everything from you can get a script there from I think it's for Ruben and Ed.
Yeah.
A lot of things. Mouse pad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons we do these podcasts, because we want to shine a light on independent filmmakers and let people know that they're out there. You know, I mean, David, how many Eraserheads or how many Zardoses do we get a week wanting to be posted? And yet someone like Trent, who deserves more, you know, more spotlight than that, because it's a very unique voice. I mean, we really need to do this. And that's one of the reasons we want to do these podcasts.
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
guys,
go
to echoblake.net. Go to Trent Harris Films. Buy his stuff. Seriously.
Yeah, do.
You won't regret it.
I won't regret it either. It'd be great.
Even if you bought a signed mouse pad, you wouldn't regret it.
And the people that are buying the stuff won't regret it either, because it's good stuff and it's incredibly strange. And that's sort of what we're doing here.
You know, it was funny because everybody kept telling me nobody's going to buy DVDs anymore because of streaming, you know. But that just hasn't been the case. People still like to collect, and they like to give presents, you know,
yeah.
stuff like
or
that.
Or take
so
it to a friend's house and say, hey, let's watch this.
Yeah. There's
definitely
something more communal about it than just a stream, I think. In fact, I don't really stream, other than the Echo people, I don't stream anything.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I'll do some of my shorts and things like that, but none of the features.
Yeah.
But you can see
a clip, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Or trailers.
The thing about it is that physical media will always survive because, A, you've got the collectors. I'm a vinyl person. I collect records.
Yeah.
And I have, at one point I was selling them, I had over 20,000.
Oh,
I don't have
God.
That anymore, trust me. But nonetheless, you know, people want physical media. And the thing is, with streaming, you don't have that, so they can take it away anytime they want.
Yeah,
they
prefer,
don't have
I'd rather have a book in my hand than go to Kindle. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. You know, so DVDs are not going to die, you know, and particularly genre stuff, the stuff that you can't find. It's the stuff that's being put out now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you were just saying they're doing a Blu-ray of Ruben and Ed.
Yeah.
You didn't expect that, but that's happening because people want it and people will buy it to have
there
it.
There are things out there I thought would never be out there.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I heard that. I mean, Sony never contacted me, so I just got a bunch of emails, people saying, oh, my God, they're releasing Ruben and Ed after 30 years, finally, on Blu-ray. I ordered one. I hope it's a good version. I hope they did a good job.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, I will. I'll post as soon as I watch it. I don't know what extras God, I can't even imagine.
Blu-ray, 4K, whatever.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So as we start to wind down here, we're about 10 minutes before eight. We've got a watch party happening at ISF, David. Why don't you tell us about that? What's going on?
I think I recommended Cronus the Vampire Hunter. It's a very good movie from the '70s.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Captain Cronus Vampire Hunter is a great film.
Great film.
The thing with the watch parties is it's a lot of fun because you put in your little comments and people have a good time, and that's one of the things we do at ISF.
It's like we're all watching it together.
Absolutely. It's communal, you know, you do it as a family. And certainly...
How do you do it? I'm not familiar with this. How do you do it? Is there a website
David,
you go to,
you
or how does it work?
That?
No, just go to Incredibly Strange Films and
right.
see it there.
Oh, it's up on the... Okay. I'm not in front of the computer right now, but I will.
I put the announcement for this, pinned the podcast announcement, but the as soon as I get done here, I'll put the Captain Crow, put the watch party back up, and you'll see it right there.
Say, Carl...
Okay.
Can't miss it.
Since we are winding down, you think I can get in a couple quick ones for Trent?
Absolutely. That's exactly the next person I was going to say. Go for it, Sam.
Thank you very much. Trent, I've got another dance-related question for you.
Yeah.
The dance in Plan 10 from Outer Space that unveils the secret of the bees, this is one of my favorite moments in all of cinema. I'm just curious about those moves, too. Did you come up with those? Did Stephanie come up with those? How did that dance come about?
Those are really – that dance is based on secret Masonic hand signals. It really is.
Okay.
And so, I knew what the hand signals were because I'd done some research, and then I got some dancers who were actually professional dancers who knew what they were doing to choreograph the scene. But isn't that a fun scene, that alien disco with all of the alien pioneers and the guy with the beehive head and everything? It's one of my favorite scenes.
It's just about
one of my favorite things I've ever seen, yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, I think you made an extremely important documentary about Pol Pot's Khmer Rouge in Cambodia.
Oh, yeah.
I called The Cement Ball of Earth, Heaven, and Hell. And I was just curious if there was a single part in filming that was the most terrifying for you.
Well, I think if you've seen it, you know. It's when we're clearing those landmines with the stick and a pocket knife there at the end.
Kind of what I figured.
You know, oh, my God. There are times like that when I'm looking through the camera so it doesn't scare me as much as if if I would have just been standing there. Somehow looking through the camera separates me. But we were surrounded by landmines. They were all over the place.
Yeah.
And,
wow.
You know, in the jungle, and if you step wrong, you're over. It was quite an amazing thing. And then going and finding Pol Pot's house, that was incredible. But, yeah.
So is this, the documentary, is that available in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I think it's on my website.
EchoCave.net, you bet.
Yeah, it's
okay. That's where I got it.
EchoCave.net, that's it. Yeah, uh-huh. Trent Harris Films. You can get a DVD of it there. I spent almost 5 years making that film. I spent a lot of time in Cambodia.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got one more caller we're going to bring in here very briefly for a quick question. Doc, go ahead. Send him in. Okay,
hello?
This is Carl. Who is this, please? Hello?
Hello? Hey, Trent.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Hello? Oh, is that Walter?
Yeah, we can hear you barely. Who is
Walter?
This, please?
That's Walter Hart.
Hey, pal. Yeah.
Walter Hart produced The Orkley Kid. He also produced Plan 10 from Outer Space.
Whoa.
Oh, nice to have you on, Walter.
Yeah, I just want to say that's the worst experience of my life is working with Trent Harris. But I still love him. I love him to death. Yeah.
Well, right back at you,
funny.
Walter.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Appreciate it.
Well, it was a blast. As Trent said, it's fun making movies if you got the right attitude, and and your expectations are manageable, and you don't have to go insane, you know. Except in a good way. You can go insane in a good way, but you don't.
Yeah, absolutely, a good way. I think we're all a little bit like that, so I can concur for sure.
Well, geez, Trent, you and your loved ones out there are well?
What's that?
Are you well? You're okay? You're healthy?
Yeah, everybody's fine. Everybody's fine. We're just all going stir crazy in the houses. You know, we got to get out of the house. It's driving me nuts.
I know. I understand.
I'm sure.
The show didn't hear about that, but I just thought I'd say hi and let you know I still.
Well, I'm glad you did, Walter. What a pleasant surprise.
Well,
that's nice.
I know you guys got to wind it up and all. I suppose it's 8 o'clock or something. You have a deadline?
More or less 8 o'clock, but it's no biggie. We can go a little over. Trent, one more thing. Do you have anything else to add to what we've talked about today, or – or are you all talked out, or whatever the case would be?
No, I'm all talked out. I just can't think of anything to do except I got to go to the bathroom.
All right. So listen, go ahead and go to the bathroom. Thank you so much for being with us today. And by the way,
thank you,
you have an open invitation. Anything that you're doing, you let me know. You're on, no question at all.
Thank you so much for being with us, Trent. Well, thank you for all you do. I really do appreciate it.
Now, we work hard, and hopefully this series will be a good series. We've got Joe Baden coming in on Tuesday, and I'll talk about that after you leave. But, again, thank you very, very much, Trent. Really appreciate it. Had a great time. Good conversation. Thanks a lot.
It's a dream come true for me, Trent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Trent.
So, again, I also have to give a thanks to Sam here, because Sam just popped right in and really did a fine job. Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it.
You know, and, of course, with Corey having a slight accident today, this all worked out well. You did extremely well, and you are more than welcome to be a guest anytime. We'll keep in touch. So to finish up, guys, just want to give you a heads up what's going on the Legion. Doc, are you there? Yes.
Oh,
Doc.
I'm here. Hello.
Hi. You've got a show coming up tomorrow. Tell us about it.
Actually, I think the show's going to be postponed because I'm recovering from this week. I have a bit of a back injury, so I'm a little rusty.
Oh, okay. Then never mind. Okay, that's right.
That's
we'll do it a week.
No problem.
Yeah.
Okay. No problem.
But so to keep going on Tuesday, we will have our third ISF podcast. And our third ISF podcast is with filmmaker Joe Baden. Joe just released a film on VOD in March, or April, I think it was, Sister Tempest. I just watched it today, and let me tell you something. It's an ISF film if there ever was one. No question. I put up a post on ISF with the trailer. This is going to be interesting, and it'll be a lot of fun. And then on Friday, Adam is taking off, and we're doing a show in memoriam of a very close friend of mine. Is near death in hospice, and she's was part of the Reno punk scene. So Robert Duran and I
are going to partner up with Punk's Not Dead PND, and we're going to do a memorial for Antonia, and that's going to be on Friday. And so that's what we have coming up on DB Religion. I truly appreciate everybody tuning in and calling in. It was a great show. Sam, if you're still with us here, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Trent, thank you very, very much. And as always, Doc, you are the producer extraordinaire. And thank you very much. Go to ISF and watch Captain Cronus now at 8 o'clock, which is about right now. So, good night, everyone. Say good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you very much for listening.